The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I didn't just say Tuesday morning. I said good Tuesday morning. But we got a clip there. It's Gil Alexander. It's Wyatt Tomchek. Numbers game. VSiN.com. Game Plus. iHeartRadio. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. Wyatt Tomchek in for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. He's not really vacationing. He's doing his friend a solid at his wedding, correct?
I don't know. I follow Kelly on Instagram, and I saw his Instagram story yesterday. He was having a real good time. I was really envious when I was doing the rundown yesterday, and I just see him enjoying life in Florida, but much deserved for Kelly.
Wyatt Tomchek, the voice of UNLV women's basketball, by the way. You should know. So when that pops up on local radio, that's always a treat for all of us. We got a great show again today. Bet Bash is in town. So a bunch of guys kind enough to come over during the week today. Author Elihu Foystel, the smartest man in sports betting, as I like to call him. He's got a new book out called Beyond the Odds, Efficient Market Theory, Tools of Warfare. Tools of Warfare for the modern sports bettor. He'll drop by, as will the gentleman I like to call the commissioner of sports betting. Captain Jack will be here. We will talk about the egregious DraftKings surcharge with Captain Jack. That might come up. Just, you know, probably. Just put that out there. That's coming up. Look forward to talking about that with him, both those guys in the second hour, along with Paul Spohr. We'll talk some AFC West, the last division we haven't gotten around to here on the show, so we will talk AFC West. By the way, my mother chimed in this morning. I don't know if you heard this. Kamala Harris has picked her VP. It is Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Tim Walz, long odds, just was not on the radar before, like really in the public sort of discourse about this. Came down apparently to Walz and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, and she went with Walz. By the way, I talked with my mother this morning. By the way, this is completely apolitical. Trust me when I say this about my mother, but she has her own rooting interest in something here. And it didn't go to Shapiro, and she said to me, Giddy, we'll just have to settle for the husband. That's her exact line. So she was very soaked in disappointment on that. That's the update on my mom, by the way. Okay, now, the big news in football yesterday, and I think this is bigger news than, well, I won't say that the ESPNs of the world are making it out to be, because they make it out to be the most colossal thing in the world. But this Brandon Ayuk deal is pretty fascinating. The latest, again, and this is reported by Tim Maioka at first, and so not, you know, a trade has not happened yet, but the Niners have the framework in place from a couple teams, the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots. By the way, Washington apparently was one of the final four. They dropped out. Pittsburgh didn't want to meet what San Francisco wanted. But in the case of the Browns, in the case of the Patriots, there is a deal in place, framework in place, where Brandon Ayuk now has to choose between the two. Brandon Ayuk seeking about $28 million a year. He wants to be paid as wide receiver one, which, by the way, he is, which we'll get to here momentarily. But remember this, the whole context of this. This could be pretty seismic in a sneaky way, because I think most people, when they think about Brandon Ayuk, they're like, well, Debo is the guy, is the straw that stirs the drink, or Kittle is the straw that stirs the drink. The thing about football, as we've talked about so many times, is, you know, basketball, the talent rules, and your eye can say, oh, Michael Jordan's better than all those guys. Baseball, it's a, you know, individual sport disguised as a team sport. Oh, that ball did go off Barry Bonds' bat. I get it. He's awesome. Football is this weird thing. We love it more than everything as a sports culture, as a sports viewing culture. But we don't really, if we're just watching the ball on Sundays or on any other day of the week, unless we're watching all 22 footage afterwards and really breaking down film, we don't really get why things happen as they do. Peter King, famous football writer, obviously, used to be a Giants beat reporter before he did the MMQB, the Monday Morning Quarterback column that is so famous now. But I remember when he was at the Sloan Sports Conference at MIT years ago, he famously didn't vote Art Monk of Washington into the Hall of Fame year after year after year. And I said to him, do you think if you had the all 22 footage, you might have felt differently about that? And he said, you know what? You're right. I might have. And Art Monk eventually gets in the Hall of Fame. But the all 22 footage is what matters. And Brandon Ayuk, to hear the mainstream folks talk about it, right, they will use, you know, they will use phraseology like create separation. wins one-on-ones, great runner after the catch. We talked, though, about this yesterday, like some advanced stats when we were talking about the AFC East yesterday, and specifically when we talked about OBJ playing for the Dolphins and how people think he's kind of a throwaway. But honestly, when it gets to the stat of yards per route run, that's sort of the stickiest stat that advanced analytics people look at, because that's sort of a reflection of efficiency. Brandon Ayuk, not only 17.9 yards per reception, ranked second in the NFL among qualified players last year, behind George Pickens, by the way, but he had 3.1 yards per route run, ranked third behind Tyreek Hill and Nico Collins. And again, that's the stickiest metric in determining how good a wide receiver really is. So maybe you're like, mumbo jumbo with the stats. I still think it's Deebo. Yeah, I don't know. The problem is that Brandon Ayuk, with all those numbers, and his agent is right about this, deserves to be paid as a wide receiver one. And so that's his position. The Niners' position as this behemoth offense, which again, you know, most people rate as number one overall in the NFL. Their viewpoint is you're a cog in the wheel, and we'd love to pay you as a wide receiver one. We just can't. And we can't move it forward. Now, the thing about this is, as we've said on this show for many years, you can only win a Super Bowl, and this is the real context of it, you can only win a Super Bowl two ways: with a Hall of Fame quarterback that just, Tom Brady-esque, that just plows through it all, or with a rookie, with a quarterback on a rookie deal who overperforms that quarterback, and you can exploit that by paying other players. That's the position the Niners are in. By the way, if you're looking for exceptions, the last time that sort of, you know, context was shattered was back in 2002 when Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. 2000, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. You'd have to go that far back to sort of break that theory. Some people will say, wait, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Yeah, but Carson Wentz was on the rookie deal, so it's a little bit different. And I do think Matthew Stafford, by the way, will get to the Hall of Fame. So I really think that's the case. You're either a Hall of Famer or you're a team that has a rookie quarterback like the Niners do in Brock Purdy overperforming on a rookie deal. So the Niners' window is after the Super Bowl loss last year in overtime. Let's remember how that went down. They lose in overtime. They elected to receive. Methodical drive downfield. They only got the field goal. Chiefs come back, get the touchdown, and win it. Niners said after the game, Kyle Shanahan did say, we thought if we got the ball third, that was the advantage. By the way, the analytics are unclear on this. There is no correct answer to that question. But the admission that is pretty amazing about that was that Shanahan hadn't really spoken to his team about it, whereas Andy Reid and the Chiefs had. So again, the analogy is sort of like, well, if you have a blackout, but you know where the flashlight is, you're still better operating knowing where the flashlight is than having to try to find it. But anyway, the Niners don't get the title last year because of that. And so now the window is this year or next year, because this is the last year of Ayuk's deal. Dre Greenlaw, Charvarius Ward, they're about to see their contracts expire as well. Debo's, George Kittle's, Christian McCaffrey's deal all expire at the end of next season. So that's the window. After that, you have to pay Brock Purdy, or again, you get into this, you know, the cruelty of NFL economics deal where you have to make a choice. Do I pay Brock Purdy this monster deal or do I not? Now, let's assume that Brock Purdy is still still one of these guys who maybe he doesn't have as great of a season as he did last year, but let's say he's a guy that they elect to pay. That's the window. So this Ayuk thing is pretty seismic, because for your bets, if you're thinking about making one on the Niners, you know, again, even if you don't think Ayuk is wide receiver one material, even if you don't think he's the main cog in all of this, even if you think Ricky Pearsall will be able to fill his role, if so, you're a better talent evaluator than I am. Maybe you didn't even buy into what Warren Sharp was saying yesterday on the show, where the Niners have this epic net rest disadvantage because they were able to overcome it last year. Why won't they be able to overcome it this year? Even if you throw all that aside, it has to give you a little bit more pause. On the other side, we're going to learn a little bit about Brandon Ayuk. If he chooses, remember the two teams here are the Browns and the Patriots. If he chooses the Browns, big thing for the Browns for sure, right? Because the Browns, what's the Browns' wide receivers? Amari Cooper, who might come, you know, would perhaps come the other direction in that deal. Elijah Moore, Jerry Jeudy, the Cedric Tillmans and James Prochets of the world, I guess, on the bench, if they're able to make the depth chart. But it would be a huge thing for the Brownies, and they'd be, you know, they're a playoff contender in an already stacked division. Or does he choose the Patriots, where you're essentially telegraphing to the rest of the world, I only care about the money because I know we're not going anywhere. Now, there's one other thing about this. This is where we stand on this Tuesday morning about this deal. And I think, again, I think it has more implications to a Niners sort of macro viewpoint than anything else. But Brandon Ayuk could still say, you know what? After all this, I kind of think I'll stick around. He has the power to nix either. By the way, the Niners, even though they're saying they have the framework, they still could back out at the last moment as well. So none of this is a done deal. But it is amazing that we have gotten to this point now, because this has obviously been bubbling under all summer long. Will this happen? Will this not? I got to the point where I thought it just was not going to happen. The Niners were going to run it back intact. But we will see now. This has a lot of effect on, you know, season win total. The Niners are 11.5. The under slightly juiced at minus 125 after a 12-5 season last year. Does this make you now want to get ahead of a possible deal? And so that's where we stand on this morning. But it's a fascinating thing because he's better than most people think. And that, you know, because the naked eye is like, oh, it's McCaffrey, it's Kittle, it's Debo. They don't need Brandon Ayuk. You get it from a Niners perspective, but I absolutely go into those stats, advanced and non-advanced stats. I get it from Brandon Ayuk's perspective as well.
100% agree. I said it a couple weeks ago. I think Brandon Ayuk is Brock Purdy's safety blanket. Whenever you need to make a play, his route running is elite. And I think that'd be a real big loss for the 49ers compared to like a Debo or somebody else.
It's tough to know where the chicken and the egg, right? It's tough to know where one thing starts and one thing ends. Ayuk's separation, getting you the underneath that you're able to go to Kittle and Debo, you know, or is it the other way around? It's tough to know unless you're watching film week-to-week basis, and those that do will tell you it's Ayuk more often than not. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on his NFL bets and the Olympics next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't heard, VSiN is now proudly owned by Must Burger Media. To celebrate, VSiN is offering its lowest price ever, a special three-year offer. This week, only get 3 years of VSiN Pro Access for just $350. 3 years saves you over 75% off the monthly price. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to everything we do, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video access, plus access to all of our betting guides. It's limited time offers available to both current and new subscribers. If you're an existing subscriber that would like to add 3 years to your account, please email us at subscribe@vsin.com. Or if you're looking to subscribe to VSIN for the first time, please visit vsin.com/special to sign up today. That's VSIN/special. Gil Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek, in for Kelly Bidlin here on A Numbers Game. We get tweets at Beanie the Book, always appreciated. This is from Las Vegas 514. Yo, how dare you, Peter King? Reacting to the story I told some time ago, or last segment, I should say, about some time ago. SN Wright, #, we will have to settle for the husband. And Mike Stacks, I was hoping Brandon Ayuk would be sent to your Skins and team back up with Jaden Daniels from their ASU days. Side note, what DK is doing is 100% wrong, and this just shows how greedy they're becoming. Bookies are smiling. Oh, we'll get into it with Captain Jack later. It is, I mean, it's not only the operator, by the way. It starts with the taxes on top of it. But then, yes, the operator is then going to pass the cost on to the customers. And the way that DK doing it is just the absolute most fucked way you can do something like that. Tony Farmer, if Ayuk goes to the Patriots, those who have the Bengals penciled in for week one in Survivor might have a little pause. It's the time of year where I see everything through the lens of Survivor. P.S. Ayuk is a great run blocker, too. That's a great point about Survivor. People are already wondering if the Patriots somehow, with Ayuk or without, somehow pull off an upset in week one. What would the people speculate? What's the percentage of entries that get knocked out week one of Survivor just on that game alone? I would hazard close to 50%. I'm going to think it's in the 40s. We bring in Drew Dinsick, ladies and gentlemen, not the host of one, but the host of two podcasts, co-host of The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with the great Jay Croucher. He comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at whale_capper. What's happening, Drew?
Oh, nothing much at all. Just putting a bow on the Olympics here as we are winding down and getting ready to pack my bag to come out and see you guys in Vegas.
There you go. Bet Bash. You said yeah. You're coming in Thursday for Bet Bash?
Yeah, we're doing Andy and I doing a live deep dive.
Nice.
11 a.m. As part of the program. And 11 to 12, come check us out. I have a very full social calendar. So if you want to meet and greet us, you should probably come see our podcast because it's probably going to be short and sweet. We're going to do some Q&A with the audience and we're going to do a lot of just kind of talking to people who just want to see and meet us. Andy and I have done 700 or something episodes. This is the 7th anniversary of the deep dive.
Wow.
We'll be on Thursday. And funny enough, we've done some in person before, but never a live episode. So this will be a first of.
You think Andy will be as funny in person or less funny?
Oh, Andy's he's the quintessential Vegas hang. When the lights are the brightest, he turns it up.
How have your Olympics gone?
It's been extremely fun. These have been the most well-produced Olympics of any I have watched in my life. That goes to a hat tip to NBC for what they're doing at Peacock in particular. The fact that you can get any sport anytime you want and back it up forward, no waiting for anything. Like the replays have been outstanding. The coverage and the calls have been phenomenal. And then hat tip to France. My goodness gracious. Paris is like, that's the city you want to have this kind of event in. It's so cool. The venues in no particular order. They did equestrian at the Palace of Versailles. My one sort of what in the heck is going on moment was watching the cross country run there where they had the equestrian athletes one at a time do a 5-kilometer loop around the gardens of the Palace of Versailles, where they do 40 jumps along the way and have to finish under 9 minutes. It was like
that's amazing.
Like what is happening here? And honestly, that was the hottest ticket of the Olympics so far, besides Simone Biles, because like everybody on a Sunday wanted to take their picnic and their wine and go
sure.
hang out and watch the cross country at the Palace of Versailles. Anyway, that was incredible. The team fencing finals have been ridiculous. It's these. I don't even know the rules until like we actually get down to watching them, and they're doing that in the Le Palais, which is like this just absolutely gorgeous space that that had sold out crowds and you know everybody you know very very into the event. The sailing that's going on in Marseille has been superbly beautiful watching that, and then the surfing in Tahiti was outstanding, incredible final run for the Frenchman who got gold yesterday. Yesterday afternoon. If you haven't seen that, that was some of the some pretty special waves. Almost a perfect 10 on his gold-winning lap there. I could go on and on, but
well, you didn't even mention beach volleyball with the Eiffel Tower is literally on top of it.
The Eiffel Tower, unbelievable. Hey, did you know they're contesting skateboarding where they executed Marie Antoinette and Louis XV or whatever? Like that was like the square where they set up the guillotines, and now they've built the skateboarding park there.
Numbers game, little French history for you, Wyatt. In case you didn't think there was going to be history in today's show. Do you have anything on this? I'm looking past Wyatt's head. We have Serbia in a dogfight here with Australia in basketball. Is that 81-80 with less than 2 minutes? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, Serbia has come back from a 20-point deficit.
Yeah.
That looked like they were done, and then now they're coming back. And yeah, I don't think Serbia realistically can challenge the U.S. if they get past Australia here. I think they will get past Australia here, but this was a pretty huge comeback from them, and Joker looks amazing. Surprise. And I think ultimately the men's basketball has been probably the least interesting of all the sports so far.
I would say.
Yeah, although you want to talk about a sweat, I have Spain golds over. It was a low number. It was 4.5, so you only need 5. We got one home, finally, in the men's skiff, which is the little 49er boats, if you're familiar. That was a thrilling race.
Drew's like, if you're familiar, literally no one is. Yeah, sure, Drew, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, sure.
But the second gold has been hard to come by, Gil.
Wake up
Sunday morning, and Carlos Alcaraz has multiple break chances to seize control of the first set against Novak Djokovic.
Brutal.
And fumbles the bag.
Yeah.
And then you flip over to golf. Jon Rahm, 4-stroke lead. oh, here we go. This is gold number two. No, he comes back to the field and then doesn't even get a medal. and then you flip over to women's 3x3 basketball. Oh, Spain made the final. Oh, we're taking on Germany. Oh, they're up four. Like, this is a short, little sprint. Like, they should get this home, right? No, they concede a 2-point shot in the final minute of that contest to lose by one. So the second Spain goal has been very, very hard to come by so far, and it has been torture. So of the things that I'm sweating the most, the Spain medal bet is the one that's at the top of the list. I think that is, it's gonna, you know, we got, I'm against France, obviously. France gold medal under, I think, is pretty much home. But you know what would help? If Spain men's soccer could beat France head to head in the gold medal match on Wednesday or for Thursday. So that one's going to be interesting. But I need the team sports for Spain to come through, water polo, soccer. I need their mixed medley race walking relay to come through. And I need their triple jumper to jump his jump of his life here to get us to five gold medals for Spain.
Beyond that, are you involved in USA is a huge favorite tonight. Are you involved in that? Are you involved in anything else singular event here moving forward?
Singular event, track and field tonight. There's a couple of bets that I have in play. Let me pull up my my cheat sheet here. Cole Hawker, I took to medal in the 1500. I think he has a chance for gold. He has a huge price. In the 3000 meter steeplechase tonight, I have El Baikali, who I think will win. Her price drifted after I thought she ran a really, really solid semifinal. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. But looking for El Baikali in the 3,000 meter steeplechase. And then the 200 meter women's race tonight is going to be probably one of the races of the entire track meet. The men's 100 is going to be tough to beat, obviously.
Obviously.
That was pretty ridiculous. You have an absolute in-form, in-class, two U.S. athletes. Gabby Thomas would be my pick between the two U.S. women. But it's tough to go against Julian Alfred. Her 100-meter was eye-openingly fast, and she potentially has something special in the tank to double up 100, 200. So market right now is not looking better there, but I'm going to be watching pretty closely. If Thomas takes money, I'm going to be on Alfred, and if Alfred takes money, I'm going to be on Thomas there. I think that one's going to be a very close meet, and I just want the better of the price between those two.
As great as this has been, can you not wait for it to be over so you can just focus on football?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sleep, work, football. I need to put a bow in this event badly.
Well, let's do that on the other side. Let's talk NFL, because you and Andy have done team by team previews. I previously had asked you what your most unconventional play is, and I think you said you're not as high on Philly as others. I'm going to ask you, what has surprised you along the way? Where in your, you know, you had a preconceived notion, then you started doing these shows. Where, what have been the teams where you've been like, either to the good or bad, you've been like, oh my God, I didn't think that was going to come up. Drew Dinsick on the NFL, all his bets on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide is available now. Let's not sleep on college football. The guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. Sign up now and receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSIN/subscribe. Patty Mills with a bucket, with an elbow bucket to tie it with 1.4 seconds left in the game for Australia against Serbia. They are going to overtime.
This is, Patty Mills lives for these types of games. Olympics, Patty Mills is like Michael Jordan. Everyone jokes.
I didn't think he was going to get a shot off, and he forced it. I don't know if he forced it up. He was able to get some room, and he hits it. So we're headed to extra time.
Maybe Drew can answer. Does FIBA overtime rules, is it anything different compared to NBA?
Drewski? Drew Dinsick, everybody?
Probably.
Okay. I'm just curious. You know how FIBA's got the different, like, you know, obviously you can sit in the paint.
That's the kind of insight we expect from Drew right there.
I'm sorry for throwing
that. Oh, that's right. You should have been in place as you're sitting there watching, you know, you're sweating France under. France surprisingly gets into the gold medal match in the fencing, women's epi, and that goes to overtime. And frantically, what are the rules? Is this sudden death? What happens here? And it literally is golden point, where you get, you basically get one shot, and whoever is the first to score is the winner. Italy comes through against France there, and then sure enough, judo team final also goes to added time, or to overtime, I guess, tied 3-3. They do it like a very fixed, like, digital spinning of the wheel to see which weight class and category gets to go twice. What do you know? It lands on men's heavyweight, and the most decorated French athlete of all time, Teddy Riner, gets to come out and
do
a second opportunity to get a point for Team France, and they get judo team gold thanks to Teddy Riner with two scoring points in that one. It was poetic, but it was also a little on the nose as far as scripted.
Yeah. Patrick Ewing going to the Knicks. What do you know? Okay. Let's talk. Well, first of all, there's tennis, by the way, and I'm not sure if you're playing anything, because with all your Olympics, I wonder if you're even handicapping tennis. But every host, every guest here on the network, every sport, VSiN.com/picks. That is for VSiN subscribers. VSiN.com/picks. All of our picks in every sport. I have two. The men are in Montreal. The women are in Toronto. I always get that confused. Men are in Montreal. Women are in Toronto. These are now officially the run-ups to the U.S. Open, which, of course, starts later this month, the fourth and final major of the year. Do you have any plays?
I did not handicap it. I'm taking a little bit of time off of tennis, much like Djokovic will probably take some time off and relish his incredible win. And we didn't really comment much on the Olympic
final. That's amazing.
But it was the best match of the year.
Yes.
It was not close. And what Joker did was unfreaking believable, despite tearing my heart out, because I had against Spain and Alcaraz individually. So that was a double loss for me. But seeing him perform that well and on that stage was pretty special, and will be very memorable. And he's the greatest of all time.
He's the greatest of all time. With the stakes, right? With the fact that he knew this would be his last chance to win a gold. It had eluded him.
I haven't seen him play that well in
8 months.
A year, 2 years, like some of the shots he was making were just unbelievable. His serve was just diabolically dialed in. His mental strength and fortitude was probably the thing that defined him, which is why I think he didn't really connect with fans as much as like the Federers and the Rafas, because they had specific things about their game that you could see and like and like really get into. The only thing about Djokovic's game is that he's the greatest returner of all time. Oh, it's not that fun though, right? Like, that's not spectacular. It's not visually appealing. But his mental toughness is really what distinguishes him. And I think the fact that he pulled that out on that stage with last chance for him to get a gold medal.
Incredible.
Was incredible. Yeah.
And you know, McEnroe makes the point. He believes not only by numbers is Djokovic the best, but what you were alluding to, Federer and Nadal were beloved wherever they played. Didn't matter where on planet Earth, they were being rooted for by whatever the crowd was in whatever country. Djokovic wasn't quite as beloved all the time, and he would get he was kind of like oversensitive with fans sometimes if there was any kind of negativity in the stands and in his matches. And McEnroe always said, he goes, that's what makes him the greatest. The fact that he was able to turn that, McEnroe should know something about this, right? The fact that he was able to turn that and always make it into a positive. Anyway, I do have two tennis picks, so I want to just wedge them in here.
Oh, yeah.
Montreal. That's on the men's side. I do have Gabriel Diallo going up against Karen Khachanov. He's +171. These should be up at the VSiN.com/picks page now. And on the ladies' side in Toronto, do I have that? Yeah, the ladies are in Toronto. Magdalena Frech, +127, going up against Anastasia Potapova. That one's starting here pretty soon. So Diallo, big dog on the men's side. Frech, dog on the ladies' side. NFL. You and Andy have been doing these great deep dives. By the way, Kelly says you guys have gone deeper, more analytically driven this year than in previous years. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not. Has anything surprised you? Like when you started researching a team, you had preconceived notions, obviously. What was the biggest surprises for you?
Yeah, honestly, the you brought it up in the previous segment, the Eagles. I was just kind of cool on them from a narrative standpoint. Like, you switch two coordinators, you had a coach on the hot seat, like that, you really don't have much room margin for error here. You had brutal collapse last year. Like, doesn't really feel like you have great locker room leadership, like a lot of kind of narrative-y things. But then when you put numbers to all of their different positional groups, it's like a super team. So that was kind of a, I may have overstepped here a little bit.
Interesting.
Bullishness for the Eagles. And their schedule is also very easy, but no, we're doing is basically going through unit by unit and coming up with, you know, quantitative numbers, you know, summing them up to come up with, you know, what we think are fair power ratings, offense, defense overall.
Just to clarify, because I think you said overstepped on bullishness. You mean overstepped on the bearishness that you had.
Oh, bearishness. And I guess it's an interesting kind of way to think about it, because it's like, okay, like some of the parts, if they equal the sum of the parts, they're going to be in the conversation for the one seed. But if there's any kind of, you know, all of the narrative stuff to me, I think kind of points to, this is a team that's probably very narrow likelihood to equal the sum of the parts, right? Like you don't have to squint very hard and see like a little bit of basically just a little bit of trouble kind of in the middle portion of their season and kind of believe that sort of the locker room kind of gives up on Sirianni. It's not that hard to believe. So probably going to be the most interesting team to watch, particularly at the beginning of the season. The Packers Falcons opening should be win-win based on pricing. But if they lose those games, this could get weird real quickly. Early bye, a lot of pressure on this team to do well now. But in particular, the week 12, week 13 at Rams, at Ravens, you know, if you have at Cowboys week 10, Rams, Ravens, 12, 13, like if you're losing those games in the middle of the season, like, can you turn it around and win down the stretch when you should be massive favorites against Panthers, Steelers, Commanders, Giants? You know, like that's kind of the key question swirling around the Eagles. But, so far they're the highest team we've rated in terms of just going position by position rankings, ratings.
Yeah.
Oops. And,
by the way, my comment about the Eagles is we might be, you know, your initial thought and my thought about the Eagles, meaning not quite as ranking them quite as good as conventional wisdom has them, could be correct, and they could still win that division. Like, both things could be true.
That's very true.
Yeah.
That's very true.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The unit, specific unit that has stood out the most clearly in terms of offensive defense has been the Jets defense.
Incredible defense.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Every single player, every single unit looks absolutely, you know, elite. And honestly, like, we're using a lot of metrics from the last couple of years to inform some of our projections here. And they did all this with their backs against the wall, spending more time on the field than any other unit and playing with a deficit, right? Like, this could look very different and even more spectacular if they're playing with the lead. And if this turns out to be a team that doesn't spend a ton of time on the field. So the fact that they invested in the offensive line and the running game has me pretty bullish on the Jets. And I really just wish Rodgers had shown more commitment to the team in the offseason, you know, mini camp, things like that, so that you kind of had a better vibe of him, you know, kind of gelling with his wide receiving group. And I wish they had kind of pulled the trigger on bringing in another offensive mind to support Hackett or replace Hackett. But that's kind of the one kind of, you know, just general monkey wrench, you know, general kind of problem with them is that their OC QB combos is on the lower side of the contending AFC teams. But we're trying to speak into existence that the Jets are going to face the Chiefs in the playoffs, because that would be one of the most fantastic matchups we could hope for in the AFC, because it would be new, it would be interesting. And I really just want to see if Mahomes can solve this Jets defense, which looks like one of the top ever on paper.
I'm smiling because, and we're going to get to it because I'm going to talk AFC West after the break here, but it's like the Chiefs are just like this Joker card in a game of war where it's like,
oh, no doubt,
all analysis, as we learned last year, can just go out the window as long as Patrick Mahomes is around. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it, man. We'll see you at Bet Bash.
Best of luck, guys.
Drew Dinsick, everybody. We'll come back. AFC West talk next on A Numbers Game.
A
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Need a contest proxy? Talk to the experienced team at Winner's Circle Proxy, VSiN's preferred proxy partner. You can join the Circa Survivor and Circa Millions contest featuring $16 million in guaranteed cash prizes with only one trip to Las Vegas before the NFL season kicks off. Winner's Circle Proxy, now in its ninth year, providing trusted proxy services to top contest players, including the 2023 Survivor and Million contest winners. Maybe they have the magic touch. Plus, don't miss out on Circa's Ultimate Contest weekend from August 22nd to 24th. It's packed with exclusive events, room discounts, live broadcasts, and more. Winner's Circle Proxy clients will get special perks like monthly access to VSiN Pro, stadium swim passes, free drink tickets, and cool sign-up bag stuffers. So head over to winnerscircleproxy.com now. Book your appointment. Again, that's winnerscircleproxy.com, VSiN's preferred proxy partner. NFL season almost upon us. It is preseason, of course. We, of course, had the Hall of Fame game last week, but the preseason begins in earnest this week. And I just want to bring it, because somebody brought this up on Twitter yesterday. So we are not a show that recommends the old three-team 10-point teasers. But week one of preseason, there's always a little carve-out for something like this. And this is sort of a brain-dead thing. But you may recall last year we did this to success. And no reason not to give it a try. The totals on some of these games are so low that if you do a three-team 10-point teaser on some of these, chances are you'll just have to tip the cap if you lose on these. Panthers-Patriots, by the way, we'll see some Drake May in this game. This is Thursday night. That total's 34.5. We got a 35 in the Lions-Giants game. You got a 34.5 in the Eagles-Ravens. 34.5, the debut of Jaden Daniels for the Commodores taking on the Jets. That's 34.5, as I mentioned. And then what else we got here? We got a 35 on the Seahawks Chargers and a 35 on the Cowboys Rams. Point being that if you stick three of those down to 25 or 24.5 and you just brain dead put them in, you get beat on that, tip of the cap. You can't get 24.5, 25, 26 points. You can't clear that in preseason game. Chances are you can't. It's worked for us so far. Anyway, we never recommend this any other time of year. Once week two happens, we'll forget it happened at all. But that's a week one preseason thing that we like to do on this show. As far as the AFC West, because that's the last division that we haven't really gotten to on the show. And again, we did it. We had Warren Sharp on with his Pro Football Guide. Obviously, we had VSiN guys on for our Pro Football Guide. Cleve T.A. with his. And Aaron Schatz from FTN. And Aaron Schatz we've leaned on heavily because he was kind enough to spend some time with us. But obviously the AFC West, if you remember his appearance, if you were with us a couple weeks back, his whole thing, Kelly asked him, who's second place in the AFC West? He was like, does there have to be a team that's second place in the AFC West? And it's a bigger thing with the Chiefs, too. And I alluded to it with Drew moments ago, which is we can do all this analysis, and we will preseason. We will during the whole year from week to week. And in the end, the Chiefs just have this wild card, right? In Patrick Mahomes, the Andy Reid-Patrick Mahomes combination. We're all analysis. Hey, Baltimore's epic DVOA. San Francisco epic in terms of historical DVOA all the way back to 1979, as far back as they go. But you know what? What's the Mike Tyson line? Everyone has a plan till you take a punch. It's kind of that with the Chiefs. Everybody's good until you have to face the Chiefs in the postseason with Patrick Mahomes. And so they win the Super Bowl. Andy Reid, maybe, you know, look, they deserve credit beyond that. They talked about overtime rules. And again, the analytics are unclear as to whether or not, you know, the 49ers played it correctly or not. Didn't work out for them. The Chiefs win another Super Bowl. And the point being that they're making, again, is that their analysis may come up again, that Baltimore is better, that San Francisco is better on paper, but the Chiefs can just do it. And here's the thing, they make the point, the Chiefs have had all these, there is no bigger sideshow distraction than the whole Taylor Swift thing. Chiefs were able to overcome that. Chris Jones, contract holdout, Chiefs able to overcome that. So they're actually probably going to be better in some of their weaker areas. By the way, Jones signs a huge deal, 5 years, $158 million. But was their big bugaboo last year? If you remember, the Chiefs during the regular season, they dropped lots of passes, including Travis Kelce, by the way. The Chiefs, according to who, you know, whichever, you know, system that you followed, whoever you followed that tracked dropped passes, 35, according to FDN, were dropped by Chiefs receivers last year. Pro Football Reference had it at 44 dropped passes. Sports Info Solutions had it at 39 dropped passes. You get the idea. Wide receivers fumbled 9 times for the Chiefs last year. this, and they still overcame this and won the Super Bowl. They've had Rashee Rice with off the field stuff, but you know they do have Hollywood Brown. They do have Xavier Worthy now, so more speed now to help out Patrick Mahomes. So they're actually better at that position, or they look to be better. They're certainly not going to, one would think, drop that many passes this year or fumble that many times at that position. Everyone obviously remembers the whole Mahomes to Kelsey to Tony play against the Bills where Tony lined up offsides. You know, at that point, think about where our brains were. What a calamity this team is. And their defense is sneaky great. Not just sneaky good. Sneaky very good at the very least. And, you know, one of the best linebacking cores, Nick Bolton, Drew Tranquil, Leo Chenal, edge rushing you a little weak, but George Karlaftis is good. Trent McDuffie leading the secondary. Steve Spagnuolo's ability to scheme. Relatively easy schedule. Yes, they have the Ravens and the Niners, but the relatively easy schedule. It's the Chiefs, man. And that's the point of the whole thing. And I mentioned this with Drew. We can talk about how much we like other teams, but in the end, there's the looming specter of Patrick Mahomes in all of this. His greatness, along with Andy Reid, of course. The Broncos. Let's start there with Team 2. I have been on this show many times slamming Sean Payton. What he did to Nathaniel Hackett broke every bro code, every fraternity code of NFL coaches. What he did to Russell Wilson, disrespectful the way he talked about him. And again, Sean Payton, as arrogant as they come. And again, how many of his 10 Super Bowls does he feel? That's right. He only won one. And he won it with Drew Brees, who, by the way, was a complete package when he got to Sean Payton. So the other thing about this, Sean Payton has his reputation as this unbelievable quarterback whisperer. I'm sorry, besides Drew Brees, who came to him already prepackaged, who did he develop into a great quarterback? I'll hang up and listen. So you think I hate him more than anybody? How about FTN? They're killing Sean Payton in their column. And the point that they're making, though, is any one of these teams, Raiders, Chargers, or Broncos, could finish second. They're actually least high on the Chargers. Broncos, the strengths, obviously, well, they're going Bo Nix, right? Because remember, 2 weeks left in the season last year, Russell Wilson benched. Sean Payton said, well, we need a spark. Yeah, he's just keeping Russell Wilson off the field because he didn't want to have to be on the hook for a big guarantee if Russell Wilson got hurt, then couldn't pass a physical. So Bo Nix is their guy, 12th pick in the draft. Here's the thing with Nix in college. 152 passes of zero or fewer air yards last year in his great year at Oregon. Highest figure of any power conference quarterback, by the way. Another 128 passes traveled 1 to 5 air yards. He threw 44 passes in Oregon's regular season meeting with Washington. Just 11 of them traveled more than 5 yards downfield. Nix, just 11 of his 31 passes against USC traveled that far. So Sean Payton's got his work cut out for him with Bo Nix. By the way, in the positive column, when he did throw the ball downfield, he was efficient, 56.4% completion rate. That was better than Caleb, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, or Michael Penix's percentage downfield. So there's something, I guess, to hang your hat on. But according to them, the offensive line just qualifies as, quote, just good enough to not get the rookie pulverized. And here's the thing. Also, defense. Defense isn't looking good. FTN says about Payton, only a cynic would suggest that Payton merely retained defensive coordinator Vance Joseph, the former Broncos head coach, who was far from his first choice as defensive coordinator, merely as a future sacrificial pawn so that Payton could use him as an excuse. Likes to collect a lot of old Saints coaches. Pete Carmichael, the old Saints offensive coordinator, is there. The man who somehow made Derek Carr even more boring than he was with the Raiders over there. He joins Payton's staff as assistant to Joe Lombardi. Assistant coaching staff full of old Saints guys. If the Saints ever finally sour on Dennis Allen, they make the case that he will be hired. Vance Joseph will be fired and Dennis Allen will be hired by Sean Payton within 0.3 seconds. So they don't love their whole thing with the Broncos is Payton wasn't shy about telling the world about, you know, about how bare the cupboard was when he took over. He'll be sure to bring it up as the Broncos grind along near the bottom of the standings this year. And he'll probably still casually mention it to shush critics next offseason. He's operating like someone who knows he cannot be challenged and therefore has no sense of urgency. The whole point of the AFC West, it's the Chiefs and everyone else. And yes, the Broncos by default could get to number two, but they aren't threatening a playoff spot, according to FTN. Nor are the Raiders, nor are the Chargers, which we'll get to. So it's a very clear division. Again, my bets, the only bets that I have the Bengals to win the AFC North, plus 175. And I've got the Steelers under season win total. I have them on an alternate season win total. I have no bets thus far in this division specifically, nor any other besides the one I just mentioned. So very sort of deliberate with me on the pre-flop NFL plays thus far. Could add more. Have a baseball play that I will tell you about that I made yesterday that I bet 400-1 odds, and we'll wrap up the AFC West as well. And Elihu Foistel joins us. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting